You are listening to the Archery Maniacs Podcast.
This is Remy Warren.
I am Rihanna Carey.
My name is Adam Foss.
This is Paul Tetford, professional archer.
Hey everyone, I'm Christy Titus, and you are listening to Archery Maniac.
We cover everything archery, from the hunting side to the tournament side, with stories, tips and tactics, gear reviews, and more.
That helped my tuning game so much when I made sure that all my arrows were square.
And I'm just staring into his eyes. Blood's dripping off of its tines. Mud is everywhere.
The clarity these mavens offer is amazing.
I'm just like Spider-Man, you know, on this rock, you know, just laying there.
Belly crawling in there, and I can barely fit in there, and I can hear the cat growling at me.
So I put my hand on his shoulder and pushed him, and we just ran at this elephant.
In this episode, Paul Metal the Elk Nut is on the show, and that's exactly what we cover. We dive into specific elk strategies for the DIY hunter hunting on public lands. We cover maps, what to look for, and virtually scouting your new area, silent elk, elk in dark timber, elk in open country, and much more. Also be on the lookout for Paul coming back on and doing a podcast all about solo elk hunting, solo elk calling, finding elk solo, and then getting elk out solo. Now, let's get into the show.
All right, everybody. Zach Harold here with Archery Maniacs. Today we have Paul Metal with Elk Nut Outdoor Productions. And as usual, Paul, it's an absolute blast to have you on the show. Today, Paul and I are going to cover really specifically being successful on the over-the-counter DIY hunts on public land. Paul and his crew are 100% and a success rate, and we're just here to help you and everyone that's listening to be successful on your next elk hunt. We understand that not everybody can go hunt private land or buy a governor tag or something like that. The majority of us are going to buy one over the counter, and then we're out there battling the predators, we're out there battling the other hunters, we're out there hunting in land that we probably haven't been in before, and that's all the stuff that Paul and his crew are excellent at doing, as well as speaking the elk language. So, Paul, it's an absolute pleasure, and I am super excited for this podcast, so thanks for being on the show.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Zach. I appreciate being able to return here, and heck, I'm more than happy to share any information that I can that may help other individuals, especially the newer hunters. You know, like you said, you brought up a really good point about hunters going into new country. That's some of the toughest mysteries to unravel right there.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, people are coming in, they've already bought their license, they are planning this hunt of a lifetime, they've looked at maps, and they've never seen the area though, because like we said, most of these people, it's not like we have months and months of vacation when it's time to go hunting. So you're using your vacation to be able to go on the actual hunt itself. So first off, when you are looking at a map, Paul, what are a few distinctions that you look at just in order to know where you should start putting boots on the ground?
Yeah, that's a good question. And we have hunted a lot of new areas, just so folks know that, other states and whatnot. And my biggest thing when I start pulling out a map, and we're going to a brand new area this year, as a matter of fact, that we've never been to. And one of the main things I do is I try to get maps of the unit that I'm going to hunt. And what I look for is I want to know where the trailheads or the trail systems go. And because this is usually the people magnet areas, this is where most of the camps are, the trucks with the horse trailers, even during archery season. Yep. These folks will congregate at access points. And so what I do is I get a good feel of where most of the hunting pressure is going to come from, and then I look for the areas that these elk may get pushed to. So if I have trails coming in from one side of the mountain, you know, whether it's on the north side and I want to come in from the south or east, west, I'm looking for the trails, where they converge or where they go, so I don't put 1,500 foot of elevation to climb away from a trail, get on top, and find out there's a trail a quarter mile from me on the other side. Yeah, so it defeats my purpose.
Yep.
And so, you know, unless that trail crosses my path 5 or 6 miles from the trailhead, then I'm okay with that, because most people will never travel that far in a trail. You see, and if someone did, it's probably a real diehard hunter, and he probably knows what he's doing anyway. And so, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's public land, and you're going to share some of those things, but you do cut the majority of the crowd out. So basically, I look on the maps. I'm trying to say, okay, where's some access points, meaning where nobody else will hunt from. And so that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the lay of the land more than anything, and seeing where the pressure is going to come from and where it's most likely going to push the elk. And so then what I do, once I have that figured out, and I can figure this out in 30 minutes, I'm done. I don't need to pore over these maps for the next hours and hours and hours. I already have a pretty good plan of where elk will get pushed to once pressure hits. Mm-hmm. So once I get there, I take a day, usually a few hours, and I drive the area around, and I start seeing where the camps are. Again, look, these trails are firsthand, because so many times you look on a map, and when you get there, things look totally different. You're like, wow. You know, sometimes, yeah, they do relate or they're similar, but other times it's like, wow, this isn't what I thought it was at all. And so you start getting a feel for it. So I like driving the unit everywhere I can where dirt roads will go and get a good feel before I even hunt. So now with my maps and the knowledge I have from the comfort of my home that I looked everything over, marked my maps up where the trails go, and then driving it, now I have an idea of some of the starting points I looked at my map, if they're worthwhile or not. Maybe mm-hmm. some got marked off. Maybe I'm adding some new ones. But the point is, I have a starting point now. I know where most of the pressure is and where it isn't. And that's usually where I'm going to start my hunt. And the most crucial thing for me at that point is, am I hunting from September the 1st to September the 10th? Or am I hunting September the 10th through September the 20th? This is going to dictate to me where some of these spots that I feel should hold elk come into play. It's a big difference between, you know, somewhat quiet elk the first 10 days as to the possibility rising dramatically for vocal elk from the 10th on. So when an individual is looking at that, you have to take that into consideration so that you can tailor your hunt for that time frame.
Gotcha. That makes perfect sense. So when you are at home and you're looking at your maps and you're picking out a spot, do you generally pick out, you know, like three different spots so that you can go drive around and look at all three and mark them off the map? Or do you just like look at that map and you're like, yep, this is the one spot that I like and I'm going to that spot. I want to drive around and look at it, but I only need to pick one.
I pick about 10.
Wow. Okay, cool.
No way in the world do I want to put all my eggs in one basket. And I find people do that. It's like people going to a new area. To me, this is one of the biggest mistakes they make. They go to a new area, and the first thing they have on in their mind, because they're all, you know, searching the internet for as much information as they can, is they want a bivy hunt. Everybody wants a bivy hunt. Okay, you have no experience in a new area. We're talking about a new area here. Never been there. You're looking at maps. You can waste a lot of time if you're going to go for a three-day hunt and you're going to head, even if you head down a trail now and you say, I'm going to go way back in there and I'm going to go past, I'm going to outdistance people is what I'm going to do. Great. What makes you think the elk are there? You see, I would rather go with 13, 14 pounds on my day pack, which will carry half an elk if I wanted to. But 13 pounds will let me go all day to get over there and cover as much ground as I can fast. 10 miles means nothing to me. Not one way, but total. So I'm going to cover as much ground in that area as I can. If I find the elk are there, now I'll come back and throw my bivy stuff in if I feel it's needed and get back over. But to go in there 3 or 4 days and you only have a week or whatever it is, you've burned everything up, threw all your eggs in one basket, hoping there's elk over there because it's a new area. You don't know. I would rather have a camp, a base camp by my rig that I'm day hunting. And this is the purpose of me driving the area and knowing where the elk should get pushed to. And a lot of times those elk where I say they may get pushed to, there's already local elk in those areas because there's no pressure. So it's just like other elk are adding to those elk. So they're already a good spot to consider because when I look on my map, I'm looking for elky areas. What's an elky area? I'm looking for drainages. I'm looking for parks in the bottom, water. If I have a beautiful drainage and it's running a mile and a half, meadowy a little bit, you know, less timber, and there's no water, I avoid that. I don't even go near it because the elk could care less if there's no water. So I'm looking for areas where it just doesn't have to have a lot of water. It could be a little pond. It could be, you know, a small little lake. It could be creeks running through it. It could be streams. But it's the fact that you get away from the pressure and these elk are less, you know, they're less pressured. And the nice thing about those type of elk is when they hear an elk sound from a hunter, they just assume it's another elk because they're not, you know, having hunter after hunter pressuring them. And I do hunt those areas too. But when I'm going to another area or a new area, my first thing is to find such areas that I feel pressured elk are going to go to or local elk are already there. And one of the nice things about that, Zach, is half the time I get over there, I start finding elk in spots I never even considered on the map. I mean, this happened.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, you get over, whoa, there's a nice little group right over here. I didn't even think about this spot. So this means calling is important. So even if I'm out there September the 1st and I'm not hearing elk and I'm going into my area, I'm a half a mile from my rig, I've just went up 500 feet, whatever, crested an area on my map, I'm showing down on the other side, is a good elky-looking spot. There's a little bit of water, good cover, dark timber. It shows there'd be little meadows down there. Some are a few acres, some are 15 acres, but it shows elky area. I'm going to call my way into this spot. There is no way I'm not going to say anything because even on September 1st, elk will respond to you. Second, the third, the fourth, not as much and not as aggressive, but I just need them to give their position away. I'm not trying to call them to me. So see, I want to find these elk before they find me. If I bust into them, game over. You might as well leave the area, go somewhere else. So I'm doing everything I can to find those elk vocally. And normally that's because it's dark timber. You can't see out real well. If I can, obviously I can glass them up first and see the pattern, the routine. Are they feeding? Are they moving from the openings to the timber? So, you know, a lot of those things come into play. But to me, those are just basic hunting skills. You're going to call your way in. Don't worry if the elk aren't calling. It means nothing to the elk. A lot of people think that you're going to run elk out because you're calling. And when I say calling, I mean the dominant sound is bugling. That's my dominant source. And I'm using a location bugle. So I'm not being intimidating. I'm just asking other elk, where are they? And you would be surprised how many times they'll answer you. Maybe only one time. But that's all you need.
So, you know, that's great when you go in there and the elk are vocal. You're feeling on top of the world. You're hearing elk. This is awesome. I'm so glad I came on this hunt. But, no, you go in there and you don't hear anything. And, it's your first time in there and you're like, man, I'm not hearing anything. I don't know whether I should be bugling. I don't know whether I should be cow mewing. I don't know what to do. Maybe I should be staying at camp until I hear something. The last thing, because when you do all that, when you travel somewhere and it's your first hunt, especially for elk, the last thing you want to do is go in there and just screw it all up. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you have those thoughts running through your head and the elk are just, they're not making noise, what are a few of the strategies that you like to implement in that scenario?
Well, you know, and all those things occur, whether it's new country or country that you're familiar with, because you can run into quiet elk anywhere. You know, what quiet elk, so maybe the listeners understand this. When we're referring to quiet elk, what we're referring to here is there are really no cows coming into heat yet. They're not in estrus, and estrus and heat for a cow coming in means the same thing. The phrases are identical. It's just a different wording is all. So if there's no cows in heat, you have no real bugling going on. In other words, no competition, very little, especially early in the season when things are just starting to roll, pre-rut times, not peak rut. And so you can hear a lethargic bugle or a lazy bugle, as a bull may bugle from his bed, or he may bugle from the feeding area once or twice in hours, and that's all you hear. That's really considered quiet elk. And of course, you know, the obvious, you hear nothing. Zero. And so those are kind of the terms or the definition when that we're referring to. So like Zach says, how do you hunt those elk? What do you do? Well, you know, there's a lot of different ways. The hardest part at this point is if you are new to the area because you don't know where the water is. You're not going, oh, I'm just going to hunt water. You can't look on your map and say, oh, this is a water source right here. Because in dark timber, you usually have a lot of water. It's not like sagebrush. And so if you have a lot of water, which areas are the elk using? You see, that's where it becomes a crapshoot. So it requires investigation. So one of the things I like to do and has helped me immensely, as a matter of fact, it's my number one tactic, if the elk are quiet. If I go out one day, and even though I do a little call and I'm moving around and I'm really not getting into any action, because me, I'm actually looking for 5 and 6 point bulls at least. Unless it's a draw tag, then I'm a 6 point or better and a real quality bull. But if you're just trying to fill a tag, I am going to go out there. My number one thing, if I went out there one day and I'm not really seeing much sign and I don't know where they're at, I don't know the area, I'm going to get in my rig and about an hour and a half before daylight, I am going to drive. Remember, I already went in the area, so I know about where the camps are. I'm going to drive away from the camps, and I am going to start calling about every mile. I'm going to stop my rig. I'm going to get out an hour and a half or so, all the way to daylight or just after daylight, and I'm going to bugle 3 times. I'm going to bugle, a location bugle, and I'm going to listen for about 30 seconds, 45 seconds. Nothing happens. I bugle again. Repeat it 3 times. Wait 2 minutes. Nothing. I move on a mile, and I do it again. Another mile, another mile. I will find the elk. As long as I can remember, I've done this for 40 years. I have not hardly ever found a day that I haven't got at least a bull to bugle back. And most of the time, it's anywhere from 6 to 10 bulls because I'm looking for a more throaty or more mature bull in the sound. So if you're just looking for elk, this is a perfect way to do it, even on September the 1st, to get into the area because elk are extremely brave at night. Extremely brave. They answer almost anything. So you bugle. When they answer you, shut up. Don't say another sound, and don't cow call, because if you cow call, you can draw them to you. If you bugle as a location bugle and they respond to you, all they're letting you know is where they're at. You ask them, where are they? They're telling you. Don't bugle again and think, oh, I got to hear them some more. Hey, you want to hear this, Joe? No, don't keep doing that, because it could actually draw them over to you out of curiosity. Why? Because they don't know who you are. Every elk knows each other by their sound out there. And so when you bugle, it really raises curiosity. One bugle, no big deal. But if you keep hammering it, you could actually draw them over while it's dark. And that's a no-no. You don't want to do that. So once you found them, what else did you find? You found where they're at in their feeding area. That's their feeding, nighttime watering area. So now I have my pack ready. The night before, everything's loaded. When I find those elk, I don't care where I'm at. What I do in new country, I immediately pull my rig over. I don't care what it is. I don't need a parking spot. I'm pulling this thing out of the way, enough off the road that somebody can get by. I shoulder my pack. Well, before I do that, I lock it in. I actually take my GPS and my map out. I lock my spot in and mark an X on my map. Rig is right there. It's because I'm in a new area. It's pitch black. I have no clue where it is. And so I mark my GPS, and away I go. I put my headlamp on, because these elk could be 300 yards away, or they could be a mile away. You'd be surprised how far you can hear at night. If it's a nice crisp morning, like a lot of them are, you hear them so far. So they're not standing next to the road. In most cases, they're way out there. So I put my headlamp on, shoulder my pack, and away I go. And so now I'm heading toward where I heard the last sound. And believe it or not, in most cases, they call back again on their own. And maybe another bull chimes in, or a cow does, or something. You're not making any sounds. All you're doing is cutting the distance. No trails, no nothing. You're going through whatever downfall, and you're making your way, and I don't do any calling. I try to get within a couple hundred yards of them, and that's it. And I wait there till daylight, and I listen. And so now once I get up there, now daylight comes. I don't know what I'm going to do yet, maybe. Maybe I do. Depends how vocal they were. Is there a cow coming into heat? I can tell by how chattery they are. I can tell if there's a competition, or are they just, is it a bull talking to his cows as he's moving them around? No real excitement. He's not aggressive. They're just communicating back and forth as they get ready to leave the feeding toward the bedding. But once I get in that area, I start looking around. I go, whoa, look at where they're eating. You can see all their droppings, where they're feeding. You can see water. It just smells like a barnyard. You found where they're watering, where they're staying there at night. And as you keep moving around there, you're seeing trails that leave it, trails that come in. All you got to do is look at the direction of the hoof, and the hoof will show you which ones they're going out and which ones they're coming in, because rare do elk use the same trail for both. They can, but most of the time the wind dictates which way they're going to go. So now I'm looking at the trails they're leaving and the ones they're coming in on. Now, if I hunt those elk that day and I am unsuccessful and they move around and they push out, I know where I can come back in the morning because I didn't booger them out. They just left before I got there. I know I can sit that trail. I know they're probably going to come right back in. I'll go there in the evening and try to catch them before they get there, before daylight, before dark. Or I can go up there in the morning and sit that trail and not say anything, the one they're leaving on, and try to ambush them as they come back through because they're saying so little. The point is now I have a strategy. And if I do this another morning and another morning and another morning, and you're going to hunt this area for the next few years, I mark these things on my map. So now you're starting to see, oh, here's a feeding area, here's the watering area, and you have a lot of conglomeration there to study now. And so, but the point is, it's given me a direction. And a lot of times I'm following these elk as it gets into the 8th, 9th, and 10th. And these elk are taking me into other elk. They're going up over the top of the mountain, down in, and now I'm getting into more bugling, like, holy cow, this is where they're at. So, you see, a lot can happen from just finding that elk from the road while they're being quiet, because they will be much more vocal at night, even though you may not hear them bugle during the day.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. It's amazing what the amount of confidence that darkness brings upon elk. You know, it's just, it's crazy. I mean, I haven't hunted near as many elk as you have, but man, the amount of, you know, vocalization that happens on a nice calm night, it blows me away. I just am like, where were they all during the day?
Oh, they're there. There's just no rutting going on. And you know what's cool too, is when you hear them at night, you know, it's a bull. See, a lot of times you may hear a hunter, or you're unsure, you hear a daylight bugle as you're moving through and you're calling and you're trying to find elk. Until you really have a ton of experience in hearing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bugles, a lot of newer hunters, it's tougher for them to decipher if it's a bull or a human. At night, you know it's a bull. There ain't no hunter out there, you know, in that.
Yeah.
So you know, okay, I got a bull right here. There's no question. So at least, you know, when you're not going in with your guard down, you know there's elk over there. And elk are herd animals. It's not by itself. There's other elk there.
You know, and that's such an excellent point right there, is the fact that you would know that it's an elk. So what about, you know, you talked about obviously the elk and what to do when you first get there, but now, you know, what about when the elk are vocal, but they're in super black timber, you know, the kind that you don't even understand how an elk can get through the black timber, for instance, and you're getting them in there, you can hear them bugling, but you can't see them, and you're unsure of how to draw them out of the black timber. I mean, is that an instance where you try and figure out where they're going to eat for the evening, and you try and get in that opening? Or do you try and, is there certain calls that you'd be doing in order to draw them out of the black timber? You know, how do you play the black timber in that scenario?
Well, that happens to be my forte, Zach.
Oh, good, good. That's what I like to hear.
And I know you don't know that, so don't let anybody think that was a lead question. It wasn't.
No, I had no idea.
That's exactly what we look for, even when we hunt sagebrush areas.
Really?
You know, like in Wyoming and different states, some parts of Montana that way, and Idaho, we wait for the elk to get in the timber before we do anything with them. We do not mess with the elk while they're in the openings. No calling, no nothing. We wait and watch and watch and be very patient. Here in the state of Idaho, where I've lived most of my life, this is what you hunt. You hunt dark timber here, really dark. As a matter of fact, binos come in to play on a rare occasion. It's that dark and thick. And so this is where calling is at its best. And the reason being is you don't have the luxury of hearing a bull and sneaking in silently, because a lot of guys will say, well, if you hear a bull bugle, why aren't you just sneaking in and killing them? Well, that shows me right there that guy has never hunted really dark, thick timber with downfall and brush and branches and just so much junk You cannot believe it. You cannot even come close to getting within 100 yards of elk. Not even close. Without sounding like a freight train, you cannot be quiet. It's just a joke. So, when you hunt country like that, you better know how to call. If you don't, good luck. Try to find the trail they're going to use moving around and babysit them. And I don't like babysitting elk. I'm there for a purpose, and that's to kill them. I'm not there for any other reason. And so understanding the elk sounds, understanding the frame of mind they're in, it dictates to me how I'm going to handle that situation. What if I come across a bull, just like you stated, and I hear a bull bugling out there?
Yep.
He's drawn me in. I can hear him 3/4 of a mile away, and he bugles. And maybe a few minutes later, he bugles again. And he bugles again. Yeah, he's giving me a direction, all right. And I can make the noise because I'm so far away, he won't even know it. But once I start getting into 100, 150, whatever the terrain allows me to, without saying anything yet, I'm listening to the bull. This is what tells me what to do next. This bull has bugled now 6, 7, 8 times. Nothing's answered him. Nothing. Why is that bull bugling? And I've also noticed that that bull is in the same vicinity. He maybe have paced a little bit, but he's where I heard him the first bugle. He's still there. Why?
Because he's probably appetite. Has cows, I guess.
No, he's...
I don't know.
He's looking for cows. He's trying to
get
to his position. This bull is not being harassed by other elk. This bull is trying to build a harem or add to his harem. This is a bull looking for cows. He's not looking for another bull. He's not looking for a fight. He's looking for cows. That's how a bull builds his squad or his harem. He calls them to his position, and he advertises himself. And so he doesn't run around the woods for miles every day trying to find a cow and go hook her up. No, they call and bring them to their position. And so the more mature bulls will usually gather the bigger harems. And so anyway, so I hear this bull. How am I going to handle that bull? Should I go in and bugle that bull? I could. What's the odds I'm going to call him in? Not very good. Probably 10%.
Is it so low because he's more interested in cows? Is that why?
Exactly. He's not aggressive. There's no hot cow.
Gotcha.
If there was a hot cow there would be competition bugling. And the bull that has a hot cow would be defensive to the other bulls. When a bull has a cow coming into estrus, he's defensive. He does not want to share her. This bull is bugling on his own. So I know what's on his mind. He is not looking for a confrontation. It doesn't mean you couldn't bugle this bull and maybe a luck of the draw he comes to you, but why not cow call? That's what he's asking for. So now you not only just cow call, you cow call on one of his bugles to let him know you heard him. You don't just start cow calling randomly. No, you just like if your son or daughter was out there and, Dad, you don't wait 10 minutes and then say something. No, Dad, yeah, I'm right here. You know, you let him know you heard them right there. And so as the cow lets him know, and he's like, no sweat. This is what he's looking for. This is what he expects. So see, everything's softening. You're giving him what he wants, not something he doesn't want at this time. So by cow calling and letting him know, now I can go at this bull if I so desire. If I notice this bull is trying to call me to him and he has not moved. In other words, I'll cow call and move in real slow. You don't have to run at him. Cows aren't just always running at the bull when they hear it. Nah, they meander and take their time. You know, they got nowhere to go. And so they meander. Let him know he heard him. And so she's moving in. And as she's moving in this 150 yards toward him, I notice the bull's not moving. He's staying right there, even though he's calling me to her. You know, see, he's calling me, the cow, to him.
Yep.
This allows me to make all the racket I want because he thinks it's the cow that is coming, that he's asking to come. He's going to do it through a short scream, sometimes through a chuckle, sometimes both. So that's what I'm listening for. I'm listening to him for, and here's what he sounds like. You want me to give the sound?
Yeah, that would be great.
Here's what he's going to do to you once you realize he's calling you to him. Thank you. That's about what he's going to do right there. He's very low-keyed on the chuckling. It's not a grunt where he's screaming, and you can hear him inhaling. You don't hear any of that. It's a real rapid ape-like with a short scream, and he's telling that cow to come on over. So listen for that, and he's going to try to draw you in, and you cow-call your way to him, crack, pop, breaking things, meandering around, and you're just... And so when the cow comes in, she's usually going to make a sound like this. She's not just making any little cow sound. She sounds like this when she responds and lets him know she heard him and she's coming. She will sound like this. She does that. You notice how it's a little more rapid than just normal cow sound. And you don't have to do it all the way to him. You just do it as you move in, and every 15, 30 feet, whatever, do a couple little something, change the pitch, be believable. You don't have to sound the same tone each time. You can soften it, raise it. You're just showing a level of excitement, and believe me, this bull starts really bugling you now. He's excited because he's got a new recruit coming, and he doesn't know who you are. He has no idea by your sound. Why does he want you coming in? Two reasons. First, he wants to scent check you. Are you coming into heat? Because cows do not, let's get this clear, cows do not make a sound to let a bull know she is ready to be bred. There is no such sound on earth that an elk makes, none. So he needs to scent check her. So as she comes in, he wants to smell her. Is she coming into heat? If she's not, she can still be part of the harem or the first one. Why? He'll wait for her to come in to be ready to be bred. So see, that's why these bulls will build their harems as they await the cows to come in and out of estrus so they can breed them. So she's more than welcome, but she could be a hot cow at that time. He doesn't know. So he's drawn her in to check her out. So now as this bull, remember, this is a bull that was only bugling. Now it gives you the luxury to go right up to him, make cow call your way, and I usually will never make another sound to him once I hit the 40-yard realm, making sure the wind's in my favor. I have good cover, and I do. I'm in that dark timber, and so I'm moving in, and I can usually see him moving, but listen for him to rake, because as you get closer, a bull will start raking. He's trying to impress or display for the cow coming in. He wants to show off to her, so listen for that. Watch it, because that usually can give you an indication if you need to make a move left or right where you're afraid you might be seen. This is your time to do it, and I've killed quite a few really decent herd bulls with a longbow doing this exact method in dark timber, and my son has too. But the point is by slipping in and going in, and as they, you know, invite you to come over their way, and this is how we do it. And I'll tell you something, it is as exciting a way as you'll ever hunt elk, to be able to slip in, beat them at their own game, and kill them right there in their bedding area. And so that's the way I would handle that bull that was advertising himself. In other words, this wasn't a bull who had a hot cow near him and there was other competition. So let's just switch gears here and say we hear a bull and two or three satellites are harassing this bull.
Uh-huh.
Same situation. Here I come up this mountain. What does that show me? He's got a hot cow. Anytime a bull is defensive. And listeners, remember that. When you have multiple bulls bugling in an area, there's at least one hot cow in the area, and one bull has her. He's trying to keep the other bulls at bay. You can listen to his aggressive bugling, to his defensive action, telling them to stay away or else. These satellites realize they cannot whip old Joe the herd bull, so they stay back out of harm's way. And that harm's way can be anywhere from 100, 150 yards, whatever their comfort level is. And they try to call the cow out of there to come and check them out as a possible breeder bull. Now, just to show you an example, when these bulls are now advertising themselves, trying to draw this hot cow out of there, realize this is a breeding sequence. This is what's going on. Those same bulls were there 3 days ago, all together, and no bugling going on. Nothing.
Uh-huh.
Why? No hot cow. When wind comes into estrus and she's ready or nearing to be ready to bred, the competition starts. Imagine Two cows come in. Three, four, six. It's a rut fest. These things are going nuts. The bull can hardly control what's going on with his group. So see, it may be one cow. It could be multiple cows. It depends on what's happening at that time. Cows don't have calendars when they're going to come in. They come in a time frame each year. So when you get into that action, what do you want to kill? You want to kill a satellite? If you want to kill a satellite, go straight to that breeding sequence. That's what brought them there. That's what brought those satellites over there. And how did they know a cow was nearing ready to be bred? Several ways. These satellites will walk these same trails from feeding to bedding, go to the water holes, go to the areas where these elk, this group of elk, these cows and the bull are bedding, and they'll smell every area out there until they finally smell the dripping and leaking of a cow coming into estrus. They smell it. Now they know, as well as the herd bull knows. And now what happens? The herd bull becomes very vocal because he is now monitoring the movements of that hot cow, not the other six or seven or eight cows he has. He couldn't care less. It's the hot one because the others can't be bred. Nothing will bother them, no more than they were bothering them two or three days ago. But now the hot cow is getting all the attention. These other bulls know it, whether they scent checked the area and smelled where this elk had been, this cow, or they hear the herd bull vocalizing, giving short lip balls, scolding that cow. She's getting too far. He doesn't like her getting out of his sight because something can hook her up and take her out, and he would not like that. So that's why a herd bull gets very vocal as he is monitoring and keeping that cow close through chuckling, through short screams, lip balls, pants. Pants show excitement. It can show excitement and frustration if the cow's not listening to him. You'll hear him kind of give those, and then he may give a short scream in there, and he's telling that cow to get back over here. He doesn't like that hot cow getting too far out of his sight. And so this dictates to these other elk out there, breeding sequence, cows coming in to eat. You see? And so you can imitate that. If you're wanting to shoot a satellite, get 150 yards from that group, imitate that exact sequence, and you'll pull those satellites in. Zach, we've taken more than 50 bulls with that sequence, most all satellites, because that's what comes in first. This herd bull is not going to leave that hot cow to run to you on a breeding sequence. So listeners, remember that. You're going to kill the satellites, but it could be a 5 or 6 point, too. I mean, they're all, you know, somewhere in there. If you want the herd bull, you have to have a totally different strategy to kill that herd bull. We have those too. But we're showing you how that we're reading the situation and applying what's going to give us the best odds for a close encounter.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the whole main goal of this podcast was more so talking to the average / newer elk hunter that is in an area for the first time, and maybe not even first time. Maybe they've been there 3 or 4 years and they still haven't, you know, been successful. That's the whole point of this
episode. If they could have been in these very situations and not knowing how to handle it, because it's very common for a person to get 150 yards from a bull and set up and call, cow call, because, you know, because they're getting a response from the bull. The bull's telling them to come on up, but the bull is not moving. He's staying right there. That generally dictates a bull with cows, okay? So when you got a bull coming towards you as you're set up and cow calling 125 yards or whatever from him, and you notice one of his sounds is getting closer and a little bit closer, that's generally a satellite. Or it could be a herd bull with no hot cows. He's bedded his cows down, and now he's willing to come over and hook this up. But you better be willing to wait 30, 45 minutes for that bull to act that way, because he does not do it quickly unless you're just right there on top of him. But at that distance, no hot cows, you can actually have him walk away from his bedded cows and come and try to hook that other cow up, because she's not coming when he's calling her. And so a lot of times you can get him to move like that. You see what I mean? And so there's just different things to play with. Other times, I've had bulls come in halfway. They just got to cow calling because he was advertising himself. And all of a sudden he come in halfway. And so now he's 75 yards, can't see him, it's dark timber, and he's trying to call me to him. So what I do now, whether I'm hunting with somebody or a lone hunter, is I leave. And I start cow calling as I leave. From the first spot, I look my spot over really well. And when I leave, I'm usually giving some fairly soft tones. And I do something like this right here. am walking away. I'm walking 10 yards, 15, 20, 25, meandering, 30 yards, not fast, just meandering. And I'm cracking, popping things on purpose, rustling. And I'm calling just so mild and slow. And he's still up there. And he may give me a sound. He may say nothing. And I keep moving away. I try to get 50, 60 yards and make the sounds even fainter. Nothing. If I'm by myself, I head right back up to where I called at first. Don't say anything, make another sound. And because where's that bull coming?
Where he's going to follow you, probably.
He's going to go where he heard the first elk sound, first cow.
Yep.
He wants to smell the area. He doesn't know who she is. He doesn't recognize her as a cow that's from that area. So he wants a smell. If there's two of us, I use one hunter will stay right there as the other hunter stays back. And I've done this and even went 100 yards away from the shooter, just meandering, giving such faint calls. And I'll tell you what, to kill that bull, I would put the odds up in the 80 to 90% chance. That's what I would say our effective kill is on a bull like that. Almost every single one of them. And almost every one come in, but sometimes the shot angle isn't right, or they come through something weird, or they catch a movement where the hunter's trying to draw. I mean, something weird, but you got them coming in. Especially that retreating cow call, like she's leaving, playing stubborn, losing interest, he's not good enough for her, that type of an attitude. And when you leave like that, it drives a bull freaking nuts. I cannot. Here he comes. And it may take a little bit. Don't think this all happens in 1 or 2 minutes. Sometimes it's 15, 5 minutes, 20 minutes, but here he comes sneaking in. And when a bull does that, I notice more times than not, on the largest majority, he comes in on a string. He does not try to hook around and scent you. He's not sneaking around trying to catch backwind on you. He just comes straight in. So a lot of hunters think, oh, they're going to try to wind you and sneak around. Hardly ever. They come right at you because of you leaving, and now you're not there. You see, we're talking about a retreating situation here. As far as he's concerned, there's nothing there. That's where you were. So it's very easy and comfortable for him to walk to that spot. So see, it's just another little technique you can use. And even if you only hear a bull give one bugle and it's a very quiet time, you see, and you hear one bugle like that and you get close enough, sometimes that's all it takes. You know, one of my other methods on really quiet elk, since we did talk about that, and I really want to touch base on this. This is such a good one.
Oh, and it's true. And I hate to cut you off, but I'm so glad that you're talking about it, because there is, when you're a new elk hunter, even a veteran elk hunter, and elk are not vocal and they're really silent, it is so frustrating.
Even if you see them. If you say,
yeah,
I see elk over here and I can see about where they're bedding, but they're not making a sound. And I can't get any closer than 100 yards. Okay. Oh. So then you say, well, I'm going to sit here and wait and wait. And maybe I can get close enough to the cows and he's going to check them. Or I could go sit a trail. Well, try to do that and have the wind hold up on you all day. That's like almost impossible. And if you blow them out because one little gust gets to him, just one, to him or a cow, it's game over and they won't return to that area. The odds of them returning are like 5%. If that, it's nothing. They just don't return. Because you blew them out of a sacred area, their bedding area. So when I'm hunting a bedding area, which is like where I kill most RL, we do kill them, most of them in the bedding area. Some in the feeding, very few in transition, but it's usually feeding, bedding, bedding being the most dominant. It's because of our techniques. So if I, let's say that I'm glassing an area, and because a lot of guys aren't hunting all dark timber, some are hunting semi-open, some sagebrush. If you can catch elk visually, and you know they went into an area to bed, and especially if you have an idea where the bedding area is, and the bedding areas are really the easiest in the world to find, because once you get in the woods and you're there from 10 o'clock till 3 or 4, and you hear one sound from an elk, one thing, that's all you have to hear, that's where they're bedded. And they're going to use those areas day after day after day, year after year after year. Mark those on your map, and that's what I'll do a lot of times on quiet days. I'm going to, you know, try to put more arrows in my quiver, so to speak, of knowing the area, knowing where the elk like to be. I'll sit on points where I can hear a long ways, and if I hear anything or get something to respond, I'm not trying to call anything to me. I just want to know where they're at, because at that time of day, that is where they're bedded. You found their bedding area. Mark your map up. let yourself know as you refresh yourself over the summer, like, oh, this is a bedding area. This is where they were watering. Here's where I called them at night, and over here at night, and over here, you know, still in the morning, and over here, and here's where I found their trails going. I mean, you get your whole map marked up, and you start showing these spots. So if I'm going to a bedding area, and I'm glassing an area that I know elk are going to eventually go to, and I glass, oh, there's a bull. He's got 5 cows. He got 8 cows. What? Not saying nothing. Nothing. There he is. No other bulls around him. How can I kill that bull? Here's how I kill that bull. I'm going to show you. What I do is I try to get in. If I can get into 70, I will. But I try to get in within 100 yards or so every time. Get the wind right. And I know from past experience that rarely does the bull bed right in the middle of his cows. He gets above them. He does it almost every time. He'll get anywhere from 30 to 80 yards above the cows in bed by himself. Once in a blue moon, you'll get a small dink bull, and he'll bed kind of nearby the cows. But remember that. He likes getting away from them, and he sits up by himself above them. Hardly ever do I ever find him below the cows. So he's above them if he has that opportunity, if the lay of the land is that way. So what I try to do is get above where I think they might be, the cows, and I get as close to the bull as I can. And what is going to provoke that bull? What is he looking for? He's looking for a hot cow. That's what he's waiting for. That's why he's got the cows. How do you show him there is a hot cow? Cows make no sound that lets him know he's hot.
Mm-hmm.
But guess who does? The bulls. That's how he knows. That's how you find a hot cow. The bull is defensive. I'm going to make a defensive situation out of this. I'm going to show him there's a hot cow over here. He needs to come and check it out. It's right under his nose. So now what I'm going to do, oh, this is what you do. You play their game.
Absolutely.
We've killed between 75 and 80 herd bulls in this 26-year span in the five of us. These are the techniques we use. You'll notice we're not just using one for every bull. It depends on the situation. We're reading the situation. We're reading when there's a bull advertising himself by himself. We're reading when a bull does have a hot cow and showing multiple bulls bugling around him. Now we're in a situation where a bull has cows and he's saying nothing. But we know he's over there somewhere. We don't know exactly, but we're going to get over there now. I'm going to set up as a lone hunter, or there's two of us. It doesn't matter. If there's two of us, it just means it's my son and I. But we're going to set up, or I'm going to set up, and I'm going to get there, and I'm going to start planting the seed and let him know. So now what am I going to do? I am going to give 3 cow calls. I give 2 soft, and 1 a little bit higher. And it's usually it's something like this right here. And I'll do something like that, you know, and I'm kind of right in the microphone. It might be kind of echoey right there.
No, that was actually really good sounding.
So what I'm going to do is do that, and now I'm going to sit there and wait. Best case scenario, the bull responds. He gives me any kind of a chuckle, a short squeal, try to tell me to come over there. I can't come over there. It's too open. I know he's right over there in that bedding area, and I can't get to him. So I'm going to say, hey, I'm going to stay right there. If he says nothing, which is, I'll tell you what, when the elk are quiet, that's most of the time. They don't say anything. But you can bet in his bedding area where he's laying that he just went, whoop, made an about face with his head right where he didn't get up. He looked over there. You can bet he did. Because why? Doesn't know who she is. Has no idea. He knows those other 6 cows. He can tell them by their sound. He hears them all day. Has no idea who this one is. So now I just wait. I usually wait 2 minutes, minute and a half, two. You know, I'm not watching my watch. And I repeat it. I do it again. Letting him know I'm in exactly that same spot. I haven't moved. So I do it. If he answers, wonderful. I may answer him. If he doesn't, most cases he doesn't, quiet elk at this time. I sit there. I wait. This time maybe a minute, and I'll give maybe a couple of low ones. And that's all I'll do. Now I wait another minute. No more cow call, and I start raking a tree right next to her. I start raking and raking the brush. And now all of a sudden this bull's over there. He's thinking, huh, an intruder bull has come in, and he's with that cow now. You see, where'd that bull come from? Who is he? He has no idea. He's just hearing him raking, and he's raking, and he's displaying for the cow. This catches his interest. So now I'm sitting there, and I'm raking and raking, and after I rake a few times, I may stop and do nothing. Just listen. and maybe get to have the cow give a sound, another little cow, real soft mew, and I'll rake again and I'll start pawing the ground, and immediately once I get into my second phase, I'll start panting. I'm showing excitement. I found this cow, and to me she's hot, so I'm and so you just make two or three of those little pants like that, just little sounds, and it, you know, the bull hears you over there, and he can hear the cow, and I'm still raking and displaying. Sometimes I'll just give him a little, just like that. I'm talking to the cow right there. I'm getting excited. I'm building her up, and I rake a little bit more, and so now I'm really pouring the cow sounds on. I'm going ahead, doing a little more panting, and I'm raking. This is showing this bull, if he answers me, because now he's getting excited. Believe me, this is what he does. You're starting to build the level up in this bull, that there's a hot cow over there because this bull is displaying for her. And he's showing excitement over this cow. And many times you'll hear the bull, now he bugles for that cow to come over. He's not really bugling at the bull at this time. In most cases, he's just going to give this kind of a note. And he's trying to call the cow over there. If he's wanting the cow to come urgently, he may give a lip ball, Zach. And the lip ball means for the cow to come over to him and for that other bull warning him to stay back. So if he gives you this kind of a sound, he's telling the cow to get over there, but that bull better stay back or else. And that's the two sounds you're looking for, because you can easily build the momentum there. And once he answers that, once he says that to you, that is when you, that bull that you're imitating, you hammer right over the top of him. Scream a challenge at him immediately. That shows him you have a hot cow, because now you're being defensive, just as he would if he had a hot cow. That's the elk world. You've now just laid the cornerstone that you have a hot cow, because now you're defending her from him trying to call her away from you over here that you've just found. That is what promotes a physical appearance right there. And you can get a good, sometimes I'll even challenge him two or three times right over him in a row without him able to give a response back. See, now I'm letting him know to stay back or else. This cow is mine. The same as if he would have had a hot cow, and now he's warning another bull to stay away. So that's all you're doing is building this up, that there's a hot cow right there. And you can't believe how well this works. I mean, it's what they're all waiting for in September, for the cows to come into heat.
Absolutely. You know, and that's a really prime example of saying the right things at the right times.
Yeah, that's, you know, no time for a location bugle.
Exactly, you know, and it's so funny that you said that, because that is literally what I was going to say. I say this is obviously a little extreme, but that would definitely not be a time that you let out an 8-second location bugle.
Nope.
Like, you just wouldn't do
it
that.
Doesn't fit. And yep. And that's where a lot of times, you know, like you mentioned in the beginning, of the right sound, the right time, and especially on do-it-yourself, over-the-counter hunts where these elk see hunters, they get pressured. And a lot of times, it's the wrong sound by the hunter, or the wrong sequence, or the sequence of events as they're trying to only cow call, nothing else. It's just not going to happen. In most cases, that bull does not want to leave those cows. So he's trying to call her to him. But you can't go over there because there's too much open terrain between you. So now you have to convince him to come your way. And in this method, and many others like it, try to portray that you are a bull with a hot cow there. And this can promote a physical appearance. Just as when he has a hot cow, it can promote a physical appearance. Let's say that bull had a hot cow and he's screaming away and he's trying to keep herd bulls, satellites away. If I can get in on this bull, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to call his cows away just with that lip ball. That's how I kill that bull in that situation. You got 2 or 3 bulls going like crazy, and you got the herd bull here. I'm going to do everything. Those bulls are sitting at 100, 125, 150. They're afraid of Joe. They know who he is. Their pecking orders have been established. I get in there, and I threaten this bull at 60 yards away, 70, whatever, how close I can get without being seen with the wind, right? I get in there, and I try to call his cow and threaten him with a lip ball. I don't go in there and just use a location bugle. No, I hit him with a lip ball. That tells him to back off and stay there. And for that hot cow, I'm trying to bring her over to me. Well, when I'm that close and those other bulls are that far away, who's going to get this attention of the herd bull? It's me. I'm right on top of this cow, and I'm trying to call her from him right there in his face. And sometimes, again, I'll hit it two or three times real fast before he can even respond back or right in mid-bugle. And I tell you what, this is what you've done. You've made it convenient. You are so close that he knows he can bull rush you, get you out of there, and still get back to his harem without leaving him unattended too far. Because I can't get any closer is the reason I'm doing it. If I can just slip in silently and kill him, that's what I'm going to do. But so much of that dark timber, as you brought up, doesn't allow you just to go traipsing and falling and watch a cow see you that you didn't know was just 25 yards away laying down behind a log. So no, you don't do that. You call him over. You've probably done that. We've all done it. Like, ah, crap, where'd she come from?
Yeah.
because of the terrain. And so you do everything you can to try to pull him over. And if he gives me any kind of lip, what I mean by that, he's not coming fast enough, that's immediately when I usually will turn and just get real excited with the cow call, letting him think I have one of the cows and maybe a hot one right there. And you know, again, it's just another thing you're injecting, and it just makes him go berserk because you already got his temperature raising. This isn't something I did before. It's now just part of it. And you can really pile it on hot and heavy, and this could be the difference of him running at you or staying there and getting in a screaming match, and which you're really trying to avoid. A screaming matches, bull wins those almost every single time. You need to convince him to come over to you. And usually the lip ball will do it. Lip ball and raking and thrashing and raking, because you're trying to draw the hot cow away that you know is there because of the other multiple bulls bugling him. And he's being defensive. You know there's one there. And so play the game right. Use the right sounds. Don't get in there and just make a couple little soft cow sounds and a weak, spindly spike bugle because you're afraid you're going to be too big and run them off. That is the biggest myth in the world. You need to get in there and have some balls. You got to hammer him. You got to let him know that you are a competitive opponent and a threat to him and his herd. You are a threat. You got to let him know you have the size. And this right there is what makes him come flying in. You can't believe how many bulls we've had come flying in. And when you do this, you better have an arrow knock, because you ain't got time. When he comes coming your way and he's committed, there is no time to pull an arrow out, knock it, get your release on, and be in full composure. It's just not going to happen. It's a high adrenaline, very exciting thing, so you have to be prepared and everything. And once you've done this a few times, you'll know what I mean. You're going to get caught with your pants down a time or two because you just can't believe they could come in that quick when you put yourself in that position. You're not calling them, you know, from 200 yards away. You're right on top of them. You know how fast a herd bull can cover 60 yards? I mean, in the blink of an eye. When he's mad, he's not strolling in. He's not just kind of whistling his way in. No, he's coming in with a purpose. And when they come in like that, oh my goodness, you'll never forget it. It's exciting.
Absolutely. You know, so we covered, obviously, coming to a new area, even if you've been there multiple times. We covered what to do when the elk are silent. We covered what to do in the black timber, which is awesome because those are, as we discussed, those are some of the most frequent questions that I get from people that just want to simply harvest an elk. You know, they're not looking to shoot a 400-inch bull. They just want to have elk encounters and opportunities to kill an elk.
Exactly.
The other main scenario and question that I get is, what about when it's open country?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like maybe some sagebrush flats, a little bit of rolling hills, maybe some cedar trees, things like that, where if you know, when you go out there and you rip off a location bugle, you feel like, man, if anything listens to this, they're going to be able to see me. You know what I mean? When it's so open that you don't know whether to call or whether to try and find them and then spot and stalk them. You know, so what's some of the ways that you handle open country such as I described?
Glassing. Glassing way over calling. Calling is really not needed when it's, you know, when it's that type of terrain. And yes, we've hunted quite a bit of that kind of terrain. And glassing is by far the most productive way of a spot and stalk, because they're in open terrain. And as you just said, if I call right there, it doesn't mean I can't call. And there's a bull over there staring at me at 500 yards away or whatever, or cows. They're going to look over, even if I'm hidden. you're given in the luxury to look over into the area they heard the sound from. And you know how elk are. Even a half a mile away, an elk can hear one sound and walk to within 2 or 3 feet of that spot. I mean, exactly. I mean, they don't need to hear you 30 times. One time.
No, it's crazy.
And they're right there. So they have you pinpointed with their eyes. So we try to stay away from any kind of calling where the country or terrain is that open where all they have to do is look over there and see nothing. And they keep glued there. It's not like, oh, they're going to forget about me in 20 seconds. It's not like that. They keep staring and staring. They heard an unusual sound, one that they're not familiar with, of an elk. They could be talking like crazy amongst themselves, mewing everywhere, not paying any attention. And you give one mew, two mews, they're glued on you. They know they don't recognize you. So why give away your presence at that time when you can do nothing about it? I think the only reason people do that is they think the elk are just going to come trotting over to them. You know, that'd be great, but you know as well as I do, Zach, it doesn't really work that way. These elk, if anything,
I wish, though.
Yeah, I
know. Sometimes I wish.
I made an elk sound. Why are they going the other way? That doesn't make sense to me. And that's how people are. But it's really, don't call
I've been them. There.
Yeah, we all have.
You know, when I very first started, you know, I was like, man, I sound like them. What's the problem?
Right. But, you know, it's that's how it is. And so unless there's timber pockets there, And I'm not seeing anything in the open, and I've really been scanning it well, glassing it, and maybe even a spotting scope from 3 miles away, and I see nothing. And so, you know, I'm getting closer, I keep walking, I'm hunting, and I see timber pockets. I'm not seeing any elk anywhere. Now I'm going to call into those timber. I'm going to call and hope that I can get a response. Just because elk are in an area, it doesn't mean they're going to answer you every time. We all know that. But, you know, you give yourself the chance. So keep calling, even if the elk aren't saying anything. Call. That's the only way you're going to find them before they find or see you. And if you did call and you moved in the timber as you're moving to another area and you bump them, hey, at least you gave it a shot. They just weren't saying anything. And that's the way it is. But most of the time when I'm going into timber, if the elk are in there and they're not saying anything, I see their sign. I'm like, oh, my goodness, look at there's fresh scat here. There's fresh. I can smell it. You know, I mean, there's elk in this area. And if, like you said, if I'm after any elk at that time, I'm going to set up. I'm going to get into a good setup position where I can't see out really more than 40 yards or so, maybe 50 at the max. And I'm going to go through a blind cold calling setup routine. I'm going to go ahead and mix it up, where there's a lot of cow-calf chatter and maybe even a bull squeal, like there's maybe a cow coming, maybe not, but mixing it up as a new group entering the area, and these elk that I know are there have no idea who they are, but yet they're entering their little area that they were just in. This can provoke a close encounter. This is where cows, spikes, raghorns, something can show up. Because of your persistent calling, when you're going to call like this in a sequence like that, it's not unusual to go on for at least 20 minutes. It doesn't mean you don't have a minute or two pause in there, but you kind of wind it up and you wind it down. Pause a minute or so, give one little call here and there, just letting these elk hear, and you know these elk are still there. They're not moving toward them or moving away or left or right. They're right there. And so as you plant that seed and let other elk in the area know in 15 minutes time or whatever, you still haven't moved, here they come. And they usually come in silent. They don't say anything. They just start doo-doo-doo. Next thing you know, you see a little movement or a pop, something pops. So you have to keep your head on a swivel and pay close attention. It's not the time after 5-10 minutes you get bored and you start rooting through your pack and making a bunch of grabbing plastic water. You know, seriously, that you don't do that. Stay focused because they're there. You already know they're. You see the sign everywhere. Something's going to come sneaking in. And what it is, who knows? But if you're in an area where any elk is legal and that's what you're looking for, you're on a short time frame to hunt, there's a great chance right there. So that's a way to hunt those quiet elk at that time, is getting into the fresh sign and hunting it. If you found an area where they're drinking water and it's obvious that they are, if I can find that in the first day or two and I'm not going to hunt it, I usually will put a camera on that. I really will. I'll put a camera right there. And then I stay out of the area, because if I'm going to sit in an area or I want elk to move through routinely, And when I say sit in area, I don't have to put a tree stand up. I just mean I might do a make fashion, you know, some sort of a fashionable ground blind or something, you see. And that's what I look for. I love to have where I'm finding water that they're using. One of the most popular spots you'll find elk using water hole areas or dusting areas or some kind of a wallow is on a bench. And what's so cool about a bench is it drops off. Benches, you know, they can be in 30 yards, 20 yards, or they can be in hundreds of yards. But I like where they funnel down and where a bench may only be like 20, 30 yards at the max across it before it goes up a mountain or drops off, you know, like a bank, and get on that lower end where the wind is more predictable and sit there and wait. And especially if I put a camera on it and I know they're using it at a certain time, I won't hunt that area and mess up their routine. Hopefully somebody else doesn't either, but if I find out, oh, there's three or four elk, they're moving in and they're drinking at a certain time, I'm going to go hunt somewhere else as I leave the camera to do my scouting. If I hunt that vicinity, I could mess them up out of the routine and they're not going to go to that water. So once I find it and I see the sign there, I don't know when they're using it, and I don't want to hunt it right there and just sit for days, I let the camera do it and I go hunt somewhere else. But see, that's another way to hunt quiet elk, is to find those sources that they're using. And you're going to see the fresh sign. You're going to smell them. And when you find those little areas, those are gold mines, because believe it or not, you could kill an elk out of that spot every single year. And that's how my son, he killed that 6-point last year. I ended up calling him in, but it was where I had a camera on, and he killed that very 6-point that I have on the camera last year. It's the very bull. He was hanging around that same little spot, and I called him in that first morning when we went out there. And so it can pay off. Don't think it don't.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Paul, you know, I can't thank you enough for being on the show and sharing all the tips and lessons and advice, and on top of it, doing it with enthusiasm so that people want to listen, you know what I mean? And I can just
thank you.
Tell, you know, that you're so passionate about it, and that in itself makes it a lot easier to learn from you. So I really, really appreciate your time today and everything that you shared. I learned a lot.
Well, I appreciate the compliment very, very much, Zach. I really do. I know you interview a lot of people, so that means a lot to me.
Yeah, well, like I say, thanks for being on the show, and it was great. I really appreciate it.
You know, I would like to add, just so people know, you know, a lot of the information that we share today and a bunch more, we have a new app that's going to be through the App Store that's going to talk about a lot of these things, and we're going to share a lot of the bulls and cow sounds that elk do use every year, and break it down and show video clips of it and explain those sounds and how to hunt them when they're making those sounds or when you should make them. And so if anybody has the opportunity, it's going to be loaded with elk hunting info that you'll be glad you checked out. So thanks, Zach.
Absolutely. You have a great day, Paul.
All right, and you do the same.
All right, see ya.
Okay, bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to the show. It means a lot to us.
But seriously, though, I really appreciate your ear. And it would mean the world to me if you would rate our podcast. If you didn't like it, 1-star it. But if you did, a 5 is even better. Don't forget to comment, like, share, and hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Some other podcasts that you should definitely check out are
Eastman Elevating with Bride and Barney,
and Hunt Harvest Health with Ryan and Hillary Lambers.
Some other YouTube channels to check out:
Hardworking Hunter, Sterling's Extremes Outdoors, and Lane Walter Productions.
And a special thanks to
Maven Optics, Six Sight Gear, Dark Energy Tech, Shield Mountain Outdoors, The Outdoor Insiders, Iron Mind Hunting, Valkyrie Archery, and Gannett Ridge Sporting Equipment.